regular rounds at the infirmary. She likes to pretend she's a tigress, but under it all, she's more like a little koala bear, actually.
No more lice patrol?
Vijay laughed.
Not until the next resupply mission lands.
In 2 weeks, Jamie knew. They'll take back a few dozen people. Then Dex'll send the evacuation flight to take the rest of the staff. We'll only have 15 people left here. 15 people. Unless. After breakfast, Jamie went to his cubicle of an office and pulled up the logistics and financial data that Mo Zarawal had amassed. 15 people, he thought. 15 men and women, working here at the Dome indefinitely, maybe for a year or more before we can afford another resupply flight. Then he called up the detailed proposal that Dex had sent from Boston. Tourists. Jamie's blood ran cold at the thought. Only 10 at a time. 3 times a year, or 4. If we go with 4, it could bring in $2 billion a year. Enough to keep us going. We'd have to shave the operation a little, cut the number of people here by 10% or so. But we could keep nearly 200 people working here. We could keep going, as long as the tourists keep coming. But now Dex wants to terraform the whole area here, put a big glass dome over the village and the cliff structures so the tourists can tramp around in their shirt sleeves. Damn! Jamie wanted to slam a fist on his desktop, but he knew that the flimsy folding table would collapse if he did. Instead, he got to his feet and paced out of his cubicle, walking blindly across the dome, wondering what to do. What to do? We're digging up the fossils of Martians, he screamed silently to himself. We're learning how they lived, what they felt, the meaning of the pictographs they carved into the wall of their temple. And nobody on Earth cares. Nobody gives a damn. Nobody who matters, at least. How can I get us through this? Jamie asked himself. Fingering the fetish in his pocket, he wondered, what path should I choose, Grandfather?
Jamie? Dr. Waterman?
Jamie blinked to see tall, gangling Sal Hasdrubble looming before him, his dark face set in a hard, troubled frown. Pulling himself out of his thoughts, Jamie said,
Sal, good morning. Can I talk to you? In private?
Sure. Jamie gestured back toward his cubicle. In my office. Hasdrubble's lanky form nearly filled the cube. His long legs stretched almost the width of the small compartment.
What's on your mind, Sal? Jamie asked.
He had slid his own chair as far into a corner as he could.
It's the crater, said Hasdrubble.
The one that the meteor impact made.
Crater Chang, Jamie said.
Hasdrubble almost smiled.
Yeah, Chang.
What about it? Hasdrubble pointed toward Jamie's laptop resting on the folding table against one of the partitions.
Can I use your computer?
Go right ahead.
Within a few seconds, the laptop's screen displayed a series of graphs. Before Jamie could ask what they represented, Hasdrubble explained,
the crater's still outgassing. He traced one of the curves with a long, slim finger.
See, here's the data from the sensors we left there. Water vapor, some trace elements. But no superoxides.
Jamie understood. The bottom of the crater is deep enough so that it's below the superoxide layer near the ground surface.
Right. And there's still enough heat to be boiling out some of the permafrost down there.
How deep is the crater? Jamie asked.
28 meters at its deepest point.
And the permafrost is still boiling off?
That can't be from the heat of the impact, not after this many weeks.
Don't know, Hasdrubble said with a shrug. But I have a hunch.
Jamie waited.
It could be the bacteria living that deep are melting the permafrost.
Bacteria?
Yeah, you know, slimes. They get their water from the permafrost. They must be able to liquefy the ice.
How could they do that?
That's one of the reasons I want to go back.
Chang won't permit it?
He says you decided we have to put all our efforts into Carlton's dig.
Jamie hesitated, then nodded.
That's right, I did.
But that crater's important, Hasdrubble insisted.
Look at this.
The biologist flicked his long fingers across the keyboard of Jamie's laptop.
Photomicrographs appeared on the screen.
Squinting slightly, Jamie said, "Those look like bacteria."
"That's right. That's just what they are, slimes, from the soil at the bottom of the crater."
"Living?" Hasdrabal's dark face was intense, demanding.
"Not for long. They're desiccating, drying out. Their natural environment is underground, where it's safe from the radiation hitting the surface, and warmer. Now they've been exposed, and it's killing them."
"So what can you do about it?"
Gesturing with his long arms, Hasdrabal replied, "Go to the crater, pack up some samples, and bring them back here where I can keep them in an environmental chamber."
"And study them," Jamie finished for him.
"And study them, right," Hasdrabal agreed. "They'll be in a simulated environment instead of the real thing, but we can watch how they react, how they grow and reproduce, how they melt the permafrost."
Jamie thought about it for a moment.
"They eat rock, iron. These slimes are siderophiles. But they need to be in a high-pressure environment and protected from solar radiation."
"And the harder stuff, too," Jamie added. "X-rays and gammas."
"Yeah," said Hasdrabal. "Exposed on the surface, they get a full dose of whatever hits the ground, even at the bottom of the crater."
Looking up from the screen, Jamie asked, "So you want to go back to the crater and scoop up some samples of the bacteria?"
"I need to," Hasdrabal said fervently. "It's important for our work here. I mean, why the hell are we here if we can't study the indigenous life forms?"
Jamie smiled, remembering when his 2-year-old Jimmy discovered the difference between "I want some candy, Daddy," and "I need some candy, Daddy." "How long would you have to stay at the crater?"
"Half a day at most."
"Well, maybe a whole day."
Nodding wearily, Jamie said, "Let me talk to Chang about it. Maybe we can squeeze in a quick excursion for you before the resupply ship arrives."
Hasdrabal nodded knowingly.
"And we start packing up to leave."
Boston, Trumbull residence.
"You really don't have to do this," she said.
Dex looked up from the small pile of data disks he was stuffing into his travel bag.
"Yes, I do," he said tightly.
His wife sighed, a maneuver that never failed to stir Dex, even though she was wearing a loose-fitting casual blouse over a comfortable pair of dark slacks.
2 weeks?"
she bleated. 5 days out, 3 days on Mars, 5 days back," Dex replied. 13 days total. I'll be back in time for Election Day."
"And what am I supposed to do while you're gone? Have you thought about that?"
Dex recognized the slightly veiled threat. He made himself grin at her.
"Read our prenup," he suggested.
"You're rotten."
"I know. I'm sorry. I told you you could come with me."
"To Mars?"
Her china blue eyes went wide.
"Sure. I've been there. It's fascinating. It'd be fun to have you there with me."
She shook her blonde head.
"Not me. I'll stay home and wait for you, like those wives of whaling sailors in the old days."
"Maybe I should build a widow's walk up on the roof," Dex muttered as he zipped up the travel bag.
"You're really leaving?"
she said, her voice going small, almost frightened.
"I'll be back."
"You're risking your neck because of your Apache friend."
"Navajo."
"Whatever. I hate him."
Dex looked squarely at her. She was really upset.
"Look, honey, it's no more dangerous than flying to London, really."
"But why do you have to go to frigging Mars just to tell him you're sending everybody home?"
With a sadness that he'd kept under control until this moment, Dex said,
"I can't tell him any other way. It's got to be face to face, man to man."
"Stupid macho bullshit," she muttered.
Dex shrugged.
"When you have to kill a man," he quoted, "it costs nothing to be polite about it."
His wife dabbed at her eyes as he brushed past her and headed for the limousine waiting to take him to the aerospaceport. It was the first time in more than 2 months that the president had invited Francisco Delgado to the Oval Office, and he wished she hadn't. The president of the United States sat behind her broad, dark mahogany desk, smiling at Archbishop Overmyer, who seemed perfectly at ease in the cushioned leather chair next to Delgado's. Behind the president, through the long windows that looked out on the Rose Garden, The science advisor could see that last night's rainstorm had stripped the last